On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Marcus Barrahall breaks down the back-to-back losses against the Atlanta Hawks and the Miami Heat. Plus, Kyrie Irving had his shoulder surgery on the day that the Nets play his former team, the Boston Celtics. I'll talk about all that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your source for your favorite team every single day. I'm your host, Marcus Barrahall. Josh, not with me today. He will be back very soon. The Brooklyn Nets had a couple of defeats over the weekend that I have to talk about, unfortunately. They do have another game tonight that I'll be previewing later in the podcast. That'll be against the Boston Celtics. A much-anticipated match for the possibility of Kyrie playing. Obviously, that's no longer the case, so even tougher for Brooklyn. I'll be talking about that again later in the podcast. The Nets did play a couple of games over the weekend, though, on Friday and Saturday, that I'll be talking about first. They took a massive L against the Atlanta Hawks, 141-118. That was on Friday, and then on Saturday night, they lost a close one, came down to really the last couple of plays against the Miami Heat. That one was 116-113. So two more losses for Brooklyn. That's five of the last six that they've lost, down to 26-33. Still four games clear of Washington in the standings in terms of the race for the eighth seed. So not a ton of reason to panic immediately just yet, but definitely a troubling slide, and they continue to lose ground to Orlando in the standings. Orlando is looking like they might take the seventh seed now and avoid that first-round matchup with Milwaukee, which might not end up mattering just because of how poorly the Nets have played. You know, it's unlikely that they'll beat anyone, but regardless, you'd have to like their chances against a non-Milwaukee team more than against the Bucks and Giannis in that first round. Especially, that team definitely has something to prove this year, with people still kind of questioning them if they can actually get it done in the playoffs. I'm sure they would like to just go out and dismantle a team like Brooklyn or Orlando in round one. So hopefully the Nets can avoid that. They need to turn things around. That did not start on Friday in that Hawks game. Like I mentioned, 141-118. That 141 points, the most the Nets have given up in a game all season to this point. So definitely not good when that is happening. Kenny Atkinson, after the game, said that the team lost their defensive identity tonight, referring to that game against the Hawks. And I think that that's definitely the case in this game. The Nets have been playing pretty decently for a team like in such a skid. The defense hadn't really been the main problem, like night to night. They weren't getting torched on the defensive end like they did in this game. And yeah, offensively, they were solid. They put up 118 points. They had a few guys. They had five guys in double figures. Jared Allen did not reach the 10-point mark, the only starter who didn't. I'll talk about him more in a second. But you had guys like Dinwiddie, LeVert, Joe Harris, Torian Prince, Garrett Temple, all of whom scored at least 16 points in this game. And for the most part, they did that pretty efficiently, like getting to the line. Dinwiddie, 8 of 8. At the free throw line, also made four threes. Prince had four threes. Joe Harris had three threes. So those guys scored pretty well and pretty efficiently. It was just on the defensive end, they could not stop the Atlanta Hawks. And you know, in the podcast leading up to that game, I previewed it and said that the key for Brooklyn was to kind of make Trae Young the only guy to score for Atlanta and to limit his assist numbers, because he's really their most dynamic offensive player. Like, clearly he's their all-star, but he's at his best when he's setting the table for his teammates and getting everyone involved and kind of spreading the wealth. And clearly Kenny Atkinson and the Nets don't listen to the Locked On Nets podcast, because six Atlanta Hawks scored in double figures. Trae Young had 14 assists. He was the only Hawk to have more than three assists in this game. So it was really, even though it was a balanced scoring effort, it was a lot of Trae Young orchestrating the show in this one. And for the Hawks, if Trae Young scores 22 and he's your third leading scorer, which he was in this game, that's a recipe for a lot of points being put up on the board. John Collins, who has a history now of dominating Brooklyn, 33 points and 13 rebounds for him, including 5 offensive. DeAndre Hunter also had a double-double with 18 and 10. Cam Reddish had a career-high 26 for Atlanta. So really, the Nets couldn't stop anyone in this game. Even Vince Carter got in the action, scored a bucket in his 27th year in the league, something like that. So for the Hawks, obviously a nice win for them. But for Brooklyn, just terrible, terrible execution defensively. And they got killed on the board, which was the bigger thing. Out-rebounded 52-38 in this game. The Hawks 15 offensive rebounds as a team, including those 5 I mentioned from John Collins, who has been really just like so good against the Nets. It's crazy. Josh and I talk about him a lot, just like in person. I know when he's not playing the Nets, he's one of Josh's favorite guys to watch. Just the energy he plays with and the versatility he has, where he can have a night like this where he has 33 points and 5 offensive rebounds, but at the same time he's hitting 3 threes in this game, he's blocking a shot, he's kind of everywhere on the court for Atlanta. And it'll be interesting to see, just quickly on them, what happens once Clint Capella is healthy, if they play those guys side by side, if they look to sort of split their minutes up and kind of play Collins as the 5 when he's out there and try to limit Capella's exposure, I guess, as like a bigger center who can't really defend on the perimeter quite as well as a guy like Collins theoretically could because of his size and frame. So that'll be interesting for Atlanta, for the Nets. You know, there's not much to take away from this. Obviously, the Hawks did also shoot the cover off the ball. Like, it wasn't just poor Nets defense. The Hawks shot 48.7% from 3 and over 50% from the field. They made 19 threes in this game, got to the line a ton. They played really about as well as they could play offensively. So yes, the Nets played terrible defense in this game and deserve to be lambasted for that. But at the same time, this shooting performance from the Hawks is not typical. But still, need to tighten things up. And switching over to that Miami Heat game, the Nets did tighten things up a little bit more in this game. This was slightly more encouraging. It was still a loss, and another loss that kind of came down to the wire and resulted in the Nets not being able to execute late in games, a situation where a guy like Kyrie Irving would obviously be very helpful to have, and the Nets did not have him. And I'm going to break down that last meaningful possession for Brooklyn. Basically, Spencer Dinwiddie tweeted about this after the game, and shout out to him for responding to fans, engaging with fans who have legitimate questions about like what was happening on that last sequence. The fan specifically that Dinwiddie responded to just sort of was like, what was going on, which I think was meant to be kind of like rude or like trolling him a little bit, but Dinwiddie took it seriously and was basically detailing what he was thinking on that last possession where he threw the ball out of bounds with the Nets down by just 2 points. He basically said that the play was for Joe Harris. Miami kind of blew that up and Joe was extra covered. Dinwiddie was kind of a few feet behind the arc at that point and didn't really have a lane to drive, so he tried to just dribble into sort of a quick pop-out spot-up three for Wilson Chandler. And then the pass itself just sort of sailed away and went out of bounds. From my perspective, I think that the pass itself wasn't really the problem. Like, obviously, that's why it was a turnover. It was a bad pass. He threw it with one hand. You know, in the heat of the moment, those kind of small mistakes are going to happen from time to time. For me, the bigger problem is not really having a definitive pivot from that first option of Joe Harris in that situation, where I get that, you know, you have a limited amount of time in the huddle, but you have all this time before the games, in between the games, to draw up all these different situations. And if Joe Harris is covered, there needs to be a more available, like a quicker plan B than just like kind of hold the ball still for a second and then eventually just kind of scramble and, because of all that panic, throw the ball out of bounds. Like, you need more action, more off-ball action being run. Chandler because I know the play up top basically had Joe coming around to pick up top with Dinwiddie handling the ball over on the wing, but like you need that's three guys involved in that play in theory. You know, those other two guys need to be doing something off the ball to kind of distract those guys to prevent rotations, to prevent help. Maybe that allows someone to slip to the basket, or maybe that clears up a driving lane for Dinwiddie with less eyes on him, as opposed to just standing there on the wing, isolated, not moving, with everyone knowing exactly what's happening and where the ball is. Like, in crunch time, I think a lot of teams devolve their offense into more isolation-heavy stuff and more one-on-one matchups, and that's, I think, specifically because they want to limit turnovers, and the more you pass the ball, the more likely you are to turn the ball over. We saw that happen in key moments for a team like the Warriors against the Cavs and all those finals runs they had, where in 2016, like, basically the Cavs were just running one-on-ones with either Kyrie or LeBron, and because of that, they're not really going to turn the ball over because there's no opportunity for someone to jump a passing lane, whereas the Warriors are swinging the ball around, they're swinging around, they're throwing behind-the-back passes. That opens the door for either a bad errant pass, like Dinwiddie had at the end of this game, or like Steph had when he tried to go behind the back, or for a guy to jump into the passing lane because he's seen this exact motion set a certain amount of times. But I think on the whole, that motion offense is going to force all five guys to play defense and force the defense to kind of be a little more out of position. I think on average, like, yeah, you're going to have more turnovers, and as a result, you're not going to get up as many shots as you would if you were just playing ISO, or if you're just having like one action like the Nets had on this play. But I think that you're going to get more quality shots when you do wind up finding a guy. So obviously I haven't run all the numbers. I don't know the exact like points per shot or like the expected value of all these things, but I feel like if something is working offensively for the first 47 minutes of the game, like, I think that just because it's the last minute and you know that, like, you'd rather, basically, I feel like a lot of coaches would rather have a missed shot than a turnover in that key kind of possession. And I get that, but I think that it's worth risking, like, whatever marginal increase there is in the possibility of a turnover if it means that you're getting a better shot and you have a higher chance of making that shot. So that's basically my larger point there. To the game itself, this Heat-Nets game, which was, like I mentioned, 116 to 113 in favor of Miami, the Heat almost blew this game. Like I said, it came right down to the wire. The Nets were down, I believe, 9 after a Kendrick Nunn 3 pretty late into the fourth quarter. And then even once the Nets had gotten back into it and they were closing the gap. Miami missed a couple late free throws. Jimmy Butler missed one. Goran Dragic missed one. I know there were only a few tenths of a second left at that point, but that did open the door for the possibility, at least, of like a heave three to tie the game for Brooklyn. So that was interesting to see. This Miami team has kind of struggled of late, so it was good for them from their perspective to get this kind of win. But you could kind of see it even like watching them win this game. It was kind of, you didn't really feel like they were in control, especially in that last stretch. And for a team like Brooklyn that has played so poorly to still be like almost coming back against a team that at one point in the season was looking like they could be like the 2 seed in the East, definitely strange, a weird vibe right now around the Miami Heat. But unlike the Nets, they're at least assured pretty much of a playoff spot at this point. So they shouldn't be too worried about it. They're more focused on trying to get that 4 seed and lock that down so that they're home against a team like Philly in round one. But for the Nets, similar to the Hawks game, I thought the offense was fine in this one. Second straight game that the Nets shot the ball pretty well from three. In that Hawks game, made 18 of them, shot 39%. In this one, they made 16, shot 36%. Nothing to really complain about there. Dinwiddie, another high assist game in this one. After having 13 in the Hawks game, he had 12 in this one, so 25 in the back-to-back for Spencer. So good to see him spreading the ball around. And again, he was efficient in this game, 25 points on just 15 shots for him. Joe Harris again played well. Torian Prince was fine. He didn't take a single two-pointer, and he only got to the line for 2 free-throw attempts. But I digress. You know, you can't when the team has lost this many games, it's not really fair to just keep pointing the blame at Prince when he did hit 3 of 8 threes, which is not terrible. So I will lay off him. Jared Allen is more the guy who, he played well in the Heat game, 17-11, shot the ball well, 7-8, played 28 minutes, which is probably the biggest thing for him at this point. After having his minute numbers kind of low the past few games, DeAndre Jordan had, pretty frankly, like, he had outplayed him since the All-Star break. So it was good to see J.A. have, like, a more solid game. And, you know, part of it could just be matchup dependent, but he needs to build that confidence up, because in the offseason, he's either going to be a key rotation guy next year for the team, or it's still possible that he gets put into, like, a trade package to try to bring a third star into play with Kyrie and KD, if you're trying to pair Jared Allen with either LeVert or Dinwiddie to try to get somebody back, you know. J.A.'s reputation, I don't think, has really gone down around the league, just because the Nets have been so bad that no one's really paying attention to them at this point. So I don't think his national reputation has really gone down, but for those watching more closely, he's definitely struggled the past couple weeks, so it'll be good for him if he can put that together, and good for the Nets, like I mentioned, either for keeping him or for trading him. They benefit either way from him playing well. So hopefully he continues to do what he did in this Heat game. One guy who will not be coming back to play anytime soon will be Kyrie Irving. It was confirmed earlier today that he had his arthroscopic shoulder surgery earlier today on his right shoulder to fix an impingement. So he's officially out for the season. Not that there was any doubt, but now it's kind of like, okay, he had the surgery. Now we can, like, work on the recovery. So hopefully this is, like, a turning point for him in his road back. You know, he could have had this surgery a while ago, probably should have in hindsight, but he opted for that cortisone shot and tried to play through everything. And he has had, like, a very non-linear path to recovery so far, where he looked like he was getting better, then looked like he was getting worse, and then all of a sudden he was playing, and honestly looked pretty good while he was playing, and then quickly dropped down, he's out for the year. So hopefully this surgery means that he'll be a little more regular and a little more, like, progressing at a steady, normal rate going forward with that shoulder injury. Sean Marks said that he should be back in the summer, should be ready to go, no problem for next season, along with KD, hopefully. So for Nets fans, just got to hope that this turns out well and that everything coalesces next year, you know? I mean, things could not have gone any worse this season. I guess they could have. They could always be worse. I remember, actually, Kevin Durant tweeted last year during the finals, like, he was, like, responding to some hater, like, this is his worst nightmare, that the Warriors were winning without him, and he was like, you think this is my worst nightmare, blah, blah, blah. And then he tore his Achilles. So things can always get worse, I guess, is my larger point. You know, if this were a TV show episode and I was wrapping up with a lesson, that would be the lesson in this podcast episode. Things can always get worse. A little bleak, but, you know, that is the life we lead. At least the Nets are not the Knicks, right? You know, Spike Lee, that controversy last night. I'll talk about that really quickly. Just Spike seemed to be confused about the entrance policy. I saw the Nets tweeted out a picture of Spike and KD basically trying to lure him over to Brooklyn. I don't expect that to happen. There was news, though, about Julius Irving, who will be attending his first Nets game in Brooklyn on Friday. They're going to have the bobbleheads for him with that Black Panther tie-in. Seems a little random, but looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing Dr. J at the game. So the Nets clearly trying to show that they care about the legends of the game and the celebrities, all that kind of stuff, trying to court those guys away, looking towards next year, where the Nets could realistically be finals contenders, and the Knicks will probably be a lottery team once again. So just trying to grease the wheels, it seems like Joe Tsai and the Nets are, for next year and beyond, with their two superstars, possibly three, if they can pull off a trade, if these Nets have any appeal to anyone in the league who has a disgruntled star at this point. So hopefully better days are ahead for the Brooklyn Nets. They play tonight against the Celtics. That game is pivotal because, like Joe Harris said, you know, you can kind of get into like a, it can kind of snowball basically when you're losing all these games in a row, and a win against a quality team like the Celtics, would definitely help to kind of give this team some confidence back. I know Kemba Walker is expected to return to this one, even though it'll be with limited minutes, but still, that's not good news for the Nets. But maybe good news is that Marcus Smart and Jason Tatum, both questionable as of this recording, with an illness, so maybe they luck out and are able to dodge one or both of those guys. You know, Tatum, player of the month for February, has been just on an absolute tear. So if he doesn't play, if Smart doesn't play, if Walker is limited, that does open the door for Brooklyn, because at that point the Celtics would be relying on guys like Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward, Daniel Tice to step up in terms of the scoring. So you'd think that the Nets would have a better chance in that type of matchup. So hopefully for the Nets' sake, those guys miss this game. Hopefully for the NBA at large's sake, it's not anything serious with any of those guys, because they're all great players, and definitely looking forward to seeing them in the playoffs when they're not playing the Nets. That'll be good. Yeah, I think that should just about do it in this game, in this podcast. I'm so focused. I'm so locked in. You know, I've got my game face on for the podcast, so sometimes they get a little confused, you know? It happens to the best of us. That'll do it for this podcast. I've been your host, Marcus Barahal. Make sure you follow the pod on Twitter, at LockedOnNets. You can follow me, at Marcus Barahal. Josh is at JMBass_. He should be landing on his flight from an undisclosed location where he was for work very shortly, so he'll be back on the pod soon. Just filling in for him solo while he's been busy with work stuff. Yeah, excited to talk to him about the Nets once he's back. And until then, be well. Bye.